Let's get to our guest. Paul Christopher is with us. Paul is head of global market strategy at the Wells Fargo Investment Institute. He joins us from St. Louis. Thanks for being with us, Paul. If I told you today that we got more hawkish Fed speak, you would probably say, so what? I mean, what's new about that? We've been getting this litany of Fed speakers who have basically been saying, look, we're not ready to dial back on tightening. And today, Jim Bullard looking at a terminal rate maybe of 5.25%, but that's really not new news, is it at all?
No, not really at all. 5.25 is very close to where the market has been pricing over the last month.
So if you had to say what the outlook for equities are in the face of this notion that a lot of this has already been discounted by the market, where do we go from here?
Well, the problem for the market is that the market believes that inflation is on the downtrend. We also believe that, but the fact of inflation having peaked is not a reason for the Fed to turn and cut rates. And that's the fundamental disconnect that still exists between the Fed and the market. That's why the market was up and down all day today, why we think 4,000 is not a sustainable rate right now for the market. There needs to be better agreement that the Fed can taper their rate hikes, but they're going to still hike, and then they're going to hold those hikes, and the economy is going to go into recession. And the market just doesn't believe that the Fed will hold rates until the economy goes into recession. That's just a fundamental disconnect. You look at earnings forecasts, for example, still around $240 a share for the S&P and the consensus. That's way too high. That has to come down.
Paul, the thing is, what people are having really a problem getting their heads around, arguably, is just how much pain that the Federal Reserve is willing to inflict on the economy.
Exactly. And 5.25 when we were at zero a year ago is quite a lot, especially when you haven't seen the full impact of those rates yet. We're already seeing housing close to or in recession. We're seeing the retail side very shaky. Real incomes have been negative now for many months. This is an economy that's showing all the signs of being pre-recessionary. And the Fed needs that recession to help it bring inflation back down to that 2% target. The market just is not in a position yet where it wants to believe that the Fed won't blink, won't pivot before we get to recession.
But if you look at the way U.S. corporates have been performing, there's an unevenness here. I mean, we heard from NVIDIA yesterday, positive news. The day before, Micron with a very cautious outlook, and that's just in the semiconductor space. Look at retail. Earlier this week, Walmart with very, very good numbers, and then yesterday it was Target that disappointed. So there's just a lot of divergence here.
There truly is. And again, in a pre-recessionary environment, that's not at all unusual. What I would ask investors to remember is that in a bear market, the first thing you have happen is the multiple compression. We've seen that all year long. And then the second shoe to drop is that earnings finally do come in much lower and validate that earlier multiple compression. So we've seen the first shoe. We haven't seen the second one yet. That's coming in 23.
Paul, we were talking about the possibility of a recession in the last segment. I just want to finish that thought off by asking you whether actually a recession is something that unfortunately the American economy may need.
Yeah, we think it does need it. You've still got some stickiness in those services prices, CPI prices, and that's what it's going to take to really break the back of those service inflation numbers going forward. We think it will happen. And we'll be back down considerably, enough for the Fed to cut rates later in the year. But first, we have to have the pain.
So I'm trying to understand an investment strategy that you may be using right now, given everything that we've been talking about, and whether any of that thinking includes moving money offshore and looking at opportunities in EM, or maybe not emerging markets necessarily, but looking at places like Japan or even South Korea.
Sure. Now, when we think about overseas markets, we think of highly trade-oriented, cyclical economies. They're outperforming the U.S. highly cyclical small cap index, the Russell 2000, for the last several weeks. But we think that's really a function of the dollar's slide in the last several weeks, and which in turn has been a function of this, again, this misunderstanding, latest misunderstanding of the markets regarding the Fed. The dollar dropped 3% after the November 2 Fed meeting, thinking that the Fed was going to be pivoting to rate cuts. And then after the CPI report, which we talked about in the last segment, the dollar dropped another 3%, again on this misunderstanding that inflation missing low by a couple of ticks would be enough for the Fed to start cutting rates. It's just not the case. So your outperformance overseas is really due to that 6% give back on the dollar. We think the dollar bounces back, and emerging and developed markets give back all their gains by the end of the year. So we would really stick with the U.S. first sort of investment strategy.
How do you, you know, look at valuations at the moment, given the storm clouds of economic gloom?
Yes, yeah, still pretty high out there, and a lot of that is being driven by a lot of liquidity and the fact that those earnings estimates just haven't come down. So every time we get a pullback, let's say to 35, 3600, the market wants to buy on any sort of suggestion that the Fed might be in the future cutting rates. And it's a sequel. It's a bad sequel to a bad movie. You should just avoid that sort of thinking altogether.
I'm going to depart and talk a little bit about the crypto space, only because this FTX story just keeps on giving. Every day we get another layer. It's being pulled back and more is revealed. I guess the advisors who are basically overseeing the runes of this firm are struggling to locate the company's cash and its crypto holdings. What is this doing to market psychology right now as you see it? Is there this severely detrimental?
Well, it's a setback for sure. And it's a reminder of something that we wrote about a year and a half ago, which is that you're going to continue to see volatility in this digital asset space. I'll call it broadly digital assets. And you're going to see additional regulation. Both of those were cautions that we offered investors. But we do think that just as you've seen volatility and then recoveries in the past, we think you'll see the same kind of pattern going forward. More regulation will come out. We'll see more adoption of blockchain. We'll see more adoption of digital ledgers. It's inevitable, we think. And so there are opportunities out there, but the investor just really has to be ready for a lot of very big ups and downs and even shocking stories like the one we've seen play out.
Christopher,
this one.
Paul, the thing is, okay, yes, certainly blockchain has a future, etc. But, you know, with all the regulation and all the other things which are coming on and we've seen a reputational damage, you've got to ask the question, what's the point of crypto?
if you look at it as more than just a currency and maybe more as a new system of exchange, we think going
Why
forward,
do we need it then?
You don't need 20,000 of them, that's for sure. But which ones will survive? That's going to be the question going forward. It's always the case when you have a new innovation that's so breathtaking like this one, you have to sort out the space first.
All right. Paul, thank you so much for joining us. Enjoyed your company there. Paul Christopher, Head of Global Market Strategy at Wells Fargo Investment Institute.